Hi, I'm Zivi Owens, and I am the host of this podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I am also a newly minted USA Today bestselling author of the novel Blank. I've created a whole community of book lovers around this podcast, a publishing company, reading retreats, a bookstore, and more. Learn more at zivimedia.com or follow me on social at Zivi Owens or join the community at Zivi Readers. Caroline Levitt is the author of Days of Wonder, a novel. Caroline is the New York Times and USA Today bestselling author of Days of Wonder, With or Without You, Cruel Beautiful World, Is This Tomorrow?, Pictures of You, Girls in Trouble, Coming Back to Me, Living Other Lives, Into Thin Air, Family, Jealousies, Lifelines, Meeting Rosie Halfway. FYI, her book, Pictures of You, we have a book coming out from Zivi Books Publishing, and it's also called Pictures of You. And it was so nice. I emailed Caroline, and I was like, hey, Caroline, how do you feel about us using this title? Because your book came out so long ago, and blah, blah, blah. And she was like, oh, anything you need. Anyway, she is the sweetest and most amazing, gracious woman ever, and I adore her. Many of Caroline's titles were optioned for film, translated into different languages, and condensed in magazines. Many of her titles were Best Books of the Year and Indie Next Picks. A New York Foundation for the Arts Fellow, she was also shortlisted for the Maine Reader's Prize and was a Goldenberg Fiction Prize winner. She recently won an award from the Mid-Atlantic Arts for portions of her next novel, The Inseparables. With or Without You was a Good Morning America pick online, a People Magazine and AARP Best Book, and a Public Library Association Buzzed Book. Caroline was the founder of the Nothing Is Canceled Virtual Book Tour, an initiative she started when the pandemic began.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Today's episode is sponsored by By Heart, which is an infant nutrition company built from the ground up to deliver real innovation on behalf of babies and parents. Their mission is simple: make the best formula in the world. In our house, we never skim on family time together on the weekends. Instead of racing around crazy, we prioritize time at home, time to relax, time to do fun, crazy things that we wouldn't have ordinarily. And you know who else doesn't skim? By Heart. By Heart is the only American-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk without a drop of skim. Whole milk is full of healthy fats like naturally occurring MFGM, which play an important role in babies' brain development and growth. Are you curious about By Heart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code name Zibby20 for a limited time. It quickly grew, and she and novelist Jenna Bloom co-founded A Mighty Blaze, which promotes independent bookstores, authors who lost their tours, and helps readers. The Blaze has hosted such luminaries as John Irving, George Saunders, Elizabeth Strout, Lauren Groff, and more, like me, and now employs over 30 passionate volunteers. Caroline lives in Hoboken, New Jersey, New York's unofficial sixth borough, with her husband, the writer Jeff Tamarkin, and has an acting student son, Max. Welcome, Caroline. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Days of Wonder.
Thank you so much.
Most anticipated sticker that you put on here.
Yes. For
Mag. I love that.
I'm going to tattoo that on my forehead.
Okay, can you please tell listeners what Days of Wonder is about?
Okay. Dad, the front story is that Days of Wonder is about the afterlives of two 15-year-old kids who were madly in love, who were trying to be separated by the boy's father, and they were both accused of an attempted murder. And the only problem is neither one of them remembers what really happened that night. So the boy goes free and the girl gets 25 years and she's early released from a technicality. And when she's early released, she's desperate to find out what happened to her boyfriend who vanished, what happened to the child she had when she first got into prison, and what really happened that night. So there's a kind of interesting backstory, which is I was sitting having lunch with a friend of mine, this woman that all my friends had told me, oh, you have to know this woman. She's so great. She's so wonderful. I thought, great. I love women friends. So I met this woman. And after we'd known each other for 2 years, she said, I have to tell you something. And I said, okay, what? And I was hoping, oh, please don't be an illness. And she said she committed a murder when she was 15. She actually did it. She knew it was wrong. She was 16. She was a car without brakes. And she went to prison for it. She was in prison for 5 years. And when she got out, she changed her identity and she was determined to become a good person. And she did. She's like, she's so beloved. She got a job. She educated herself. She, the only thing she couldn't get over was that she felt she had this secret and she couldn't tell people. Mm-hmm. She felt she couldn't be forgiven for it. So she was fine until she was 40 years old when somebody found out. And they outed her. And she lost friends. She lost jobs. She lost just...
Wait, the actual woman?
The actual woman. They outed
her. Oh, my gosh. Yep. Okay.
So she was just like devastated. And she said, okay, I'm going to have to do this again. And she did it again. She took on a new identity, moved, took on a new persona or whatever. And she was just very guarded. She never had a close relationship after that with, you know, a sexual partner. She just kept her women friends close. And after she told me, I just said, you know, I love who you are now, and who you were is not who you are now. Mm. And she was, you could see like the relief was, I wanted to write about that, but I wanted to keep her privacy. So I vowed that I would never mention her name. And I never have. And then I would change the story. So I took her story. And first I made an attempted murder instead of a murder. Then I made it. I still had like two young kids, but I made it more of a Romeo and Juliet story. Mm-hmm. Because I'm a sap for those kind of stories. And as I was writing it, I started like putting in other stuff. You know, my mother's story started coming up. And I just, by the time I was done, it had almost, the only thing that it had of my friend was, you know, that longing to be forgiven and that attempt to try to live a different life. And that was it.
Oh my gosh, amazing. Well, there's so much in the story. Not only when you say the Romeo and Juliet thing, you have this great scene where Jude meets Red, as we'll call her, you know,
yes,
her nickname before Ella changes her hair and all of that after prison is, you know, to change her identity. But as a native Upper East Sider myself, I found this quite amusing. So can I just read like a little section from, the Dalton party? You know, I did not go there.
Yeah.
But
I had a Dalton boyfriend when I was
you
younger.
You did? Oh my gosh. Okay. I'll just start from the beginning of the chapter. So this is, you have a dual timeline here, and this is what actually happens from in the back. Ella held her breath, tugged up her skirt to shorten it, and then, along with her two best friends, Suze and Christina, walked toward the high rise on East 76th. She looked up at the ornate carvings on the limestone building and felt dizzy. Everything in the Upper East Side seemed so clean and empty compared to other areas of the city, particularly Queens. The sidewalks looked bleached. Every tree was surrounded with bright flowers and gated with wrought iron. People here were so dressed up, they looked polished, wearing fancy fabrics and walking fancy dogs who sometimes had jeweled collars and even little rubber boots over their paws. Ella had no idea what to think of all this. And then the next paragraph, she had no idea what to think of this event either. Billy, Suze's cousin, had told Suze that his parents were in Tahiti all weekend. He was throwing a party, putting it on his dad's card, and he wanted her to come. Bring your friends, he said.
I do want to say that the Upper West Side is it's pretty gentrified, too, that a lot of New York is like that now. But I just had to sort of boost it up a little.
Yeah. It's also not that clean right now.
but that's okay. There's like garbage everywhere. It's fine. No, but this whole lifestyle and someone sort of from the outside looking in and her feeling like so out of place. And of course, we've all felt so out of place.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine anyone who hasn't had that feeling. I know I have, where you go into an environment and you feel like the odd one out. And then all of a sudden she gets like recognized by this guy and they feel this connection and she can't even really believe it. So tell me about that. And was that what it was like with your Dalton boyfriend?
It was like that for me. We actually, I was a little older than Ella and we actually moved into this fabulous apartment. It was on the Upper West Side, though. He had gone to Dalton, and it had, you know, I was living in a crummy little one bedroom, it was just a studio that had sloping floor and mice and stuff. And all of a sudden I was living in a 4-bedroom apartment overlooking the park at night. And we had 2 doormen and they knew me by name. And I was just sort of astonished. And his parents were extremely wealthy and my parents were not. I was sort of a working class girl growing up. And I was kind of dazzled and I didn't know exactly how to act a lot of times. And I remember his mother took me aside once and said, I have to take you shopping. You're not dressing well. And I mean, that might have been like, I don't want to make a blanket statement that this is like all people who went to Dalton, but it was like that specific moment. And I just never forgot it. It was strange. And when we broke up, I was really sad to leave the apartment, not because it was so big and beautiful and was like right by the park, which certainly mattered, but because I really liked the doormen. I mean, they were my friends. They would, you know, I would like come in crying from a fight or something and they would be really nice and say, sit down. I won't open the doors until you've calmed yourself down. And I thought that was really lovely. And I missed that. Gosh. I missed that.
So funny, because 2 other books that I am interviewing authors for this week, there's one book called Welcome Home, Caroline Klein, and in it is a scene which almost could have been from your life, where she's dating the wealthy young guy from New York and envisioning these like amazing vacations and this lifestyle, and he breaks up with her, and she's like, okay, like now I'm on my friend's couch in Queens and like, this is not exactly what I thought my life was going to be.
So. I know it's very weird. And I'll tell you why this guy also, he was, he went into finance. And so he had a whole lot of money. He used to say, you know, you're a writer and I'm going to be a writer when I have enough money. And I said, well, you work on Wall Street with enough money. And he said, well, I have to have like $5 million in the bank. And I, who had $2,000 in the bank at the time, thought, oh, okay. And the funny thing was that I met my husband, Jeff, after him. And I really, really liked Jeff right on the spot. And when I told him that I met somebody, he said, well, what does he do? And I said, well, he's a rock and roll journalist. And there was this look on this guy's face. And he said, you're leaving me for a rock and roll journalist? And I said, yeah, I think I am. And the thing was, I ended up fixing up with another friend of mine and, you know, they were happy and they were fine, but he kept bringing that up. Like, you left me. Do you know what you could have had? And I said, well, yeah. And I do think about it sometimes, but it's not everything. It's not everything.
Wait, what happened to that guy now? Do you have any idea?
Yes. I actually got an email from him a few years ago. And he said, why don't we meet for a drink? I know the mixologist. That was the word he used. I know the mixologist at the, I forget what hotel it was. It was some fancy hotel. And we can talk. And I thought about it. And then I thought, you know what? I don't really want to meet him. So I told him no. And he was fine about it. He's married to a socialite now, I think. And he has a bunch of kids. And, you know, he was an interesting guy because he actually came from no money and he built himself up. So that's why those kinds of things were so important to him, I think.
Hmm. Wow.
Good sort, just not my sort.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow. Well, this is like the movie version of your teenage years here coming back or whatever, early 20s.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, Ella takes a totally different turn in life and does not, mm-hmm. you know,
just happily wander off with a rock and roll journalist, but instead does try to, you know, get a new identity and a new job as a writer, but doing the advice column, which is really interesting. How did you think of that, by the way, as a plot device?
Well, you know, I needed a job that someone could do that couldn't do anything else. And I have a lot, I know a lot of people who do advice columns and they're wonderful. I mean, I'm friendly with E. Jean Carroll and she's just hilarious. And Rick Moody does these wonderful advice columns where he used to through a magazine. And I thought, this will be really fun to write. And so I wrote a few of them. And actually my editor hated the ones I originally wrote. He said, these are very good. This isn't very good advice. Can't you do better? And I thought, oh my God. So I went back and I tried to do better. And I had to rewrite them a couple times too, because it's hard to give good advice because you have to sound smart and you have to do this. And I thought that was the perfect odd thing for someone who had been in prison to give advice. And she ended up giving decent advice.
I found her relationship with her mom to be just very poignant, right? The mom obviously has been her crusader while she was in prison, just patiently waiting and doing what she could. And then finally she gets out of prison and she's like ready to start their lives together. But meanwhile, Ella is an adult and is like, okay, bye.
Right. It's different.
Oh my gosh. And that scene, you have her mom, you know, crying at night in the other room. It broke my heart. Oh my gosh.
Oh, just, you know, my son is 27 and when he left for college, you want them to go out in the world, you want them to be happy, but you also want them to always be cuddling with you. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely a heartbreaking thing because it's like you knew them when they were kids and now they're adults and you don't know them that much. Mm. And I wanted to write about that in a sympathetic way because, you know, that's what it is to be a mother. Your kids are all still home, right?
Well, I have two who go to boarding school, so I know they it's not the same, but
it's not this. Yeah, but it's still like, you know, it's hard. It's hard, yeah. Because when they're young, they're with you all the time,
yeah.
All the time. And also Ella's mother was really my mom. And, you know, okay. I used all my mom's stories and my mother was like that. She was incredibly loving, but she always thought I was too independent, mm-hmm. which I wasn't. I wasn't independent at all because she wanted her daughters, you know, to be girlfriends, you know, to be with her all the time. And I just couldn't do that. So, and it's hard when you love somebody like I love my mom and you couldn't give them what they wanted, but that's part of life.
How did you make that okay? Like, how did you not feel the guilt or did you feel the guilt or like how much therapy did this take?
I felt really guilty, of course. But what I did is, you know, I could always talk to my mom and I sat her down and I said, look, you know, I really love you. You're a wonderful mother. I said, but I don't really need a mother right now. And we can have a close relationship and I'd really like you to be my friend. And she said, I'm not your friend, I'm your mother, which was really difficult. So I had to sort of set boundaries. I mean, mm-hmm. because she was like calling 50 times a day. And mm-hmm. I just would preface things by saying, I really love you, but I can't talk now. I have to run out and do an interview or I have a meeting here. Or I have to do something else. And after a while, she kind of grudgingly accepted it, though she never liked it. She never liked it. So I wanted Ella's mom to accept it a little bit more in hopes that that relationship would, you know, expand. And I think it will.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra.
Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Sometimes we all have stuff we need to get off our chests. Even if we don't think it's interfering with our daily life, there are some things you just haven't processed, be it grief or trauma, eating disorders, anything. It might be time to work on those things, and I have a solution for you. Therapy. Online therapy by BetterHelp. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. I took the brief questionnaire online where there were, 20 questions. It didn't take long at all, maybe 3 minutes. And then I got matched with a therapist who could help me work on whatever. I picked trauma because even though it happened in 2001, I am somehow still not over the loss of my friend on 9/11. And it is what it is. BetterHelp is going to help. And I am so excited, especially because with my special code, instead of $80 a month, it is 10% off, $72 a month, which is so much less than traditional therapy. And you'll get a perfect therapist for you. There are 35,000 therapists to choose from, so you'll find the right one. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/momsdonthavetime today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. .com/momsdonthavetime.
So when you're writing, do you, for this, like for saying that Helen is really your mom, did you know that going into this book that you were going to have a character who is similar to your mom, or did your subconscious just kind of take over and you're like, oh, I just wrote my mom as a character in this book?
The subconscious took over and it was so surprising because I thought, oh my God, I'm writing about my mom. And I write about her a lot and it's always my subconscious. And I think it's because my mom died a few years ago and this is my way of having her still alive. Mm. I mean, I just keep thinking she would love this if she were alive. She would be so proud and she would tell everybody and say like, that's me and da da da. And I just feel it's like an homage to her. But it was totally subconscious on my part. And then once I got into it, I thought, okay, I might as well like dive in and make it even more so. So I did.
Wow. So funny what our brains do, right?
Yeah.
And you're like,
does that happen to you?
Well, I was literally just, I did an event with Dani Shapiro earlier today and she was saying the same thing that, you know, it's just the characters just take over and that's how it's supposed to be though. That means you're doing it right.
Right.
So another element of the story, which is also heartbreaking, is that Ella gave up her, we learned this early, I don't think this is a spoiler, but that Ella had
That's
to
not
give
a spoiler.
Up. Right. Ella gave up her daughter and didn't, somehow the press, by the way, did not get a hold of this while she was in prison, which is a remarkable feat. But then, and she, you know, searches and finds out the adoption agency and they will not tell her, but she, you know, sneaks a peek and realizes they're in Ann Arbor. And so off she goes. But yet, even though she wanted, it's like, you can't really believe when you're reading the book that a decision like that for some piece of your flesh and blood, that you could sign any sort of paper to prevent you from seeing them for the rest of your lives. I mean, it's almost I know that's a convention. I know adoption is a thing, you know? I'm not silly, but it's crazy, really, right? When you think about how life...
It's horrible. Yeah. It's horrible. I mean, after we had my son, I couldn't have any more kids and we wanted more kids. So we tried to adopt and we tried open adoption, domestic, and we tried international adoption. And the international adoption just didn't work out. So we decided to do domestic. And what happened that just made me crazy is I would talk to all of the birth mothers and they were really upset. They said, well, you're never going to love my child as much as your biological child. And I kept saying, but that's not true. If I thought that was true, I wouldn't be attempting to do that. And I remember we finally got a match with this wonderful woman in Montana. She was a nurse. She was educated. She really liked me. She really liked Jeff. We had all these conversations. And she said, you know what? I think you're going to be parents of my daughter. And as soon as she said that, I started loving that child. And we were waiting a week because we were supposed to fly out. And when you're working through an adoption agency, they contact you through an 800 number. You cannot contact them. She never called us. She just never called us. And I called the adoption agency and said, what happened to her? And they said, we don't know. Sometimes this happens. It happens a lot. And I said, well, why does it happen? Did she change her mind? Can I talk to her? Did she? And the adoption agency said, sometimes it's a scam and sometimes it's not. And I was so upset and I was mourning that child so much that I didn't even know that I thought was going to be mine, that I just said to Jeff, I can't do this. Let's just count our blessings. We have one gorgeous son and we'll be fine. And I never looked back. And still to this day, I think about that kid. And that kid, you know, I never saw the baby. But so I wanted to write about that. And that was another thing. I didn't realize I was writing about it until I got into it, because I was thinking, well, how do you deal with why she'd feel this way and how the adoptive mom would feel? And all those feelings just rushed back. And I thought, oh, you know, when you think that the baby is going to be yours, no matter whose it is, it's yours, only it isn't. So that was tough for me to write.
Ugh. Do you feel like you've made some sort of peace with it, having written it?
Yeah, I have. I have. And I also, you know, there's a lot of things. I mean, I lost a child 4 months into a pregnancy also, which was just, you know, they always tell you, like, at 3 months, that's the safe mark, right? Where you can, like, go and tell everybody. So I was so happy, and I told everybody, and I bought all these clothes. And I went in for my fourth month checkup, and the doctor said, I'm really sorry. There's no heartbeat. And I kept saying, it's four months. And I remember from that loss, like, people say all sorts of things because they don't know what to say. I mean, some people would say, well, at least you could get pregnant. So you can get pregnant again. Or people would say, well, you know, you didn't really know the baby, or all kinds of things that they're trying to be nice. And the only person who got it was my friend, Joe Fisher, who I've known for 8 million years. And she said, look, I knew you're always going to consider that baby your first child. And when she said that, I thought, that's exactly right. I do consider that baby my first child. And I always think about that child and, you know, wish it well. And it's just sort of something you deal with. And then, you know, Max was born a year after that, and that helped a lot. But it's sort of like I always felt, well, he had a sibling. They just never got to meet.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm sorry. And I know last time on the podcast, or was it just when we were talking? I don't know. You shared your story of the trauma of the childbirth and all of the, oh my gosh, you've been through a lot, Caroline. Oh my gosh.
But I stay happy.
I mean, it's good. It's just, you know.
You have to. I mean, that's what life is. It's, you know, you can take two directions when something awful happens. You can get bitter and lock yourself away, or you can say, okay, how can I proceed from this? And I prefer to do the how can I proceed from this route.
Wow. The only way, what is it? The only way through is through. I don't know. The only way out
is through. Yeah, the only way through is through. Yes,
yeah. Talk for 2 minutes about your work with The Mighty Blaze and founding that and all your author advocacy and helping and expansion and, you know, tell everybody about that.
Well, the day the pandemic hit, I was supposed to fly on the start of a new tour for With or Without You to talk to 100 librarians. And Algonquin called me up and said, no, your whole tour is canceled. Everything is canceled. It's lockdown. And when I got off the phone, I said, nothing is canceled. Nothing is canceled. And I had practiced this speech with hand movements. So I made a video of it and sent it to Algonquin. And they said, this is really good. We're going to send it to the libraries. And I thought, okay, what can I do to help my friends? Because everybody was freaking out. So I posted on Facebook, look, I'm starting the Nothing is Canceled book tour. If you're an author and you want to promote your book, all you have to do is make me a short video, call out another author and show their book, and call out an indie bookstore. And I thought I would have like four, and I had 200 after 3 days. So all I was doing was like processing these videos and, you know, posting about them. And then Ron Charles from the Washington Post called me and said, Caroline, what are you doing? And I said, I have no idea. And he said, well, keep doing it. So I kept doing it. And the next week it got worse. Then it was like 400 people. And then Jenna Blum, who I sort of knew, called me up and said, do you need help? Because I'm really good at this kind of stuff. And I said, oh my God, yes, please, please. So we banded together. And Jenna was right. She's really, really great at scheduling stuff and managing stuff. And so we put together a Mighty Blaze, and it was her name, and we made her the CEO, and I was the co-founder. And we started reaching out to authors saying, would you like to come on? We're starting a Mighty Blaze and blah, blah, blah. And we reached out to newspapers, and, you know, nobody was doing anything back then. So they were, except for you, and they were, you know, the Washington Post, New York Times, Publishers Weekly, all these other places wanted to interview us and promote the stuff. And I was just overwhelmed because I'm really a shy person. And it was hard for me to get out and do this, but I started contacting every writer I had ever done something for. I mean, I once wrote a letter to John Irving 6 years ago where I asked him for nothing and just saying how much he meant to me. And he actually wrote me back saying, you know, I read your letter 3 times. You didn't ask for anything. So I'm writing you back. And I wrote him back and I wrote him and said, look, now I'm asking you for something. Please, will you come on a Mighty Blaze? And he said, yes. So, you know, I got to talk to my hero. And once I did that, it was easier to reach out to people. And I just aimed high and said, look, we're doing this because of the pandemic. We don't know how long it's going to last. And it started to grow. And all of a sudden we had 30 volunteers working for us. And then all of a sudden we had all these different shows. And then Jenna started doing these book festivals. And now we're doing a book review show. And it's our fourth year now. And I don't go to any of the meetings anymore, do any of the strategy anymore. Because what's so great about this job is Jenna said, well, what do you want to do? Where are your strengths? And I said, I just want to talk to writers. And she said, okay, that's all you have to do. So that's all I have to do. And it's worked out great. And there's something, as you know, because I call you the North Star of all writers, which you are, when you do stuff like this for other people, it always somehow comes back to you and makes you feel good. It's like you get this golden halo around you. I love being part of the writers community. I love talking to writers and I like helping them. And, you know, I've actually used you as a model a lot of times because you are so generous. And also, I don't know if you realize this or not, but you could be the most, you know, conceited person on the planet, and you're so real. You are so real. I love it when I talk to you and you will say, I'm really exhausted or I'm worried about that. And I think that's totally genuine. And also, I just want to say that the people around you are that way too. When I went to your new year, new chapter, it was astonishing. It was like, there must have been like 300, 400 people there. And the vibe was like, everyone was radiating joy. Everyone. And it was not funny. It was not that weird competitiveness. There was none of that. And I thought, that's the kind of community I want to be a part of and I want to promote. So thank you.
Oh, that's a lovely thing to say. My insecurity, I'm like, why would I be conceited? But okay, thanks. You know, but anyway, I appreciate it. Look, we all have different ways that life could go. You know, we all take different paths in life with what we're, you know, given. And, you know, I think you and I share the same love of, I mean, I know that you and I share the same love of authors and literature and book and helping others. Yeah. And it is for other people, but it feels good to us to help. So
it's good to us to help. Thank you so much, Zivi. This is just wonderful. And I really appreciate it. And anything I can do for you, you just give a holler.
Same
and
here. I'm there. Okay.
Thanks. Bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you love it, please leave a review and follow us on social at Zivi Owens and at Zivi Readers.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.